good evening, and welcome to USCHO Live Friday at the 2024 Frozen Four in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Ed Trefsker alongside Jim Connolly, Derek Schooley. Lots to cover tonight in a one-hour podcast stream. We're going to be talking about last night's semifinal games and a bit about the awards that were announced earlier this afternoon. Plus, we'll give a little bit of a preview of tomorrow's national championship
game. Is it only
game.
Friday?
It's only Friday.
Sounds like it's been here a month.
Yeah. You look tired, buddy.
But we saw two very different hockey games. The first one really a thriller, and the second one sort of over in the second period.
I just want to start by saying that Schooley deserves all the credit in the world. He said on our podcast yesterday, if Denver's going to win, they're going to have to win a 2-1 type of game. Well, they won a 2-1 type of game. Exactly.
That was really tough, seeing that they had won already 2-1.
I don't care. I mean, like,
2-1
games. Who could have said that that was going to happen a third time? And it was one of those games that I mentioned it to a bunch of people, and they mentioned it to me during the first intermission. BU could have been up 2-0, 3-0. And the fact that they never were, and Jay Pandolfo lamented on this in the post-game press conference, the fact that they never extended that 1-0 lead, and that let Denver have some believability about themselves. And this is a team that if they believe, they feel like they're in just one of those places right now, and it shows how great of a coach David Carl has to be to work his team from the mental side to believe in themselves right now. And they really did yesterday. And once they had that believability, they got into the game, they finally tie it. And then once they got into that situation, I thought that they locked down the game. They were the dominant team for the third period. They were the better team for a portion of overtime. They get a good turnover break, go up the ice and score. And that's been the story of this Denver team in the postseason. Get scored on early. I think they're 15-4-2 when scored upon first. Ed, you were doing the numbers just too. Is that right? Something like that. 15-4-2.
Yeah, including yesterday's game.
That's a crazy number.
Because it's not like that even for very good teams.
No, it's not.
Everybody wants the USCHO pin while we're here. We're on the air, bud.
Live on the air. Just come out right over and ask. Thank you.
Somebody
took our bag. We did have a bag of pins at one point yesterday.
Yeah, we're selling them now. $25.
But you know, going back to that, I mean, like, how many times could that game have been over BU just finds the way?
If you go back and read my tweets, and if you go back and watch Ed and our post game, that game was so one-sided in the first period. That was BU, BU, BU.
Yeah.
And minus the one, there was a chance right off the bat that BU could have scored on. Then they
45 seconds in,
and then they got the shorty. They didn't have much after Denver scored their goal.
Once Denver tied that game, it
completely flipped.
And penalties did not help Boston University.
And I will go back to, and you asked me today when we were sitting around the hotel, did I feel that there should have been a penalty or two on Denver? And I'll use the same thing I used when we played Minnesota this year and Minnesota didn't have a penalty. Are you telling me that Denver did not do one thing all game to deserve a penalty? I will say they did. And BU deserved a power play.
Maybe.
They deserved a power play in overtime when they got six flashed out of their hands. There was another one that they deserved a potential power play. You said that the one they reviewed, you even said it, the one they reviewed for a five-minute major
after the game was over should have probably been a two. Could have been a two.
Yeah,
for sure.
So there's a lot of different things that there could have been to Ty Halpern just walk by as we're talking about penalties. So, yes, I believe that BU should have had a power play. What was the stat?
I've got it right here.
169 minutes?
No, 167 minutes and 53 seconds. The final 167-53 of the season, BU's power play didn't see the ice. That's from SID at Boston University, Brian Kelly.
And that was the game that you did in
the Rochester game, yeah.
The RIT game, yep.
Yep. And the Minnesota game.
No, right? Penalty. So it was late. That, that be
the first period?
I'm doing that's first period, right?
Yeah.
One, two, yeah. That would be first period of the RIT game was the last power play they got. Nothing in the second, nothing in the third, nothing in the whole Minnesota game. Nothing. Well, I guess we had some overtime, so maybe I'm crossing some stuff here. It might have been early in the second period, but regardless, it's been a long time since that power play saw the ice. And
it was dirty. Wasn't like it was a dirty game.
No,
it was egregious, but there was something that could have given. If one team has four, has to be one the other way.
You know, I looked at a couple of replays of potential penalties. And I don't think I found the slash that you were talking about. That was the one I probably haven't seen. But I saw somewhere it could have been tripping and taught. But the number of times in that matter, the number of times that a player for BU went down and it looked, that could have been a trip, the player was going down already. And then by the time maybe a stick hits the skate, now they go down. They really go down harder, maybe. Or, you know, I'm not trying to talk about embellishment. That's not the way it was. But I can understand why the referees let that go. And if you watch the regional that they called, this crew called, I was out in Springfield. It was the same Big Ten crew that called game two between Maine and Cornell. And then they called the final between Cornell and Denver. They called the games the exact same way. They didn't waver. They didn't change their approach. The penalties BU took were penalties. A high stick that catches somebody in the face.
Yep.
Two blatant trips.
Yep.
And then a hit from behind or whatever you want to call it, a boarding
that
call.
Been a five.
5 minute most of the time. I think they were a little lenient being the fact that it was seconds away from overtime at that point. You didn't want to put a team on the And I'm not even going to say that. I talked to the refs last night, and they said that they didn't feel like that was totally what you were supposed to do when you're in a five-minute situation. They didn't feel like that. I'm trying to describe it in the words that they use. It didn't warrant it, and it was basically because of the hit looked worse than it was to them.
Right.
It wasn't that bad of a hit, but it looked bad. The player was already going down, but the smash that he took, that could have been a five in many games.
Well, and we didn't see all the camera angles that they probably saw in the booth.
Right, 19 camera angles I think they have, so they had plenty.
When any time there's a no-hitter thrown, and that's what we call it in the profession when a team doesn't have a penalty, is a no-hitter. And I've been a part of
I got to tell you, I never heard that.
I've been a part of a perfect game once.
Neither
too.
Team?
Yeah, I've been a part of a perfect game. When there's a no-hitter thrown, there's always one or two that you can go back to and said that should have been called. And if you go back, it was at center ice, the slash of the hands. That would have been after four power plays for Denver. That would have been real easy to put that put them on the power play in overtime just to even things out a little bit.
Can I ask you this? If tomorrow night we get 7-6 in penalties, 13 total power plays. Are we going to sit there and say, the refs should have stayed out of the game?
No, I'm just saying it should have been 4-1. I'm not saying 4-4. I'm just saying they should have had one power
play.
So
here's what I would say. I think I said this to you at the hotel today. Maybe BU should have had two power plays, but then Denver probably should have had seven.
Well, in any case, whether the balance was correct, I would love to see a lot more games called the way that was.
I enjoy it. I think when you let the players decide the game a little bit more, it's not, again, you said it, Derek, it wasn't a dirty game. It wasn't egregious. Going nuts. I loved the way both teams played. They still played a good brand of physical hockey. Nobody ever got out of control, and you didn't have to call a lot.
I sat down in the stands with Wayne Wilson in the third period from RIT, and the guy behind us was like, they don't hit in college hockey anymore. There's no physicality and blah, 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 blah. And Wayne and I were just like, really? I mean, because these guys are the two very skilled teams and they were clogging up the neutral zone. It's funny just to listen to some fans sometimes talk too. But I'll tell you this. We're talking about, I think we just spent a lot of time talking about penalties. The thing that we probably should be talking about is the unbelievable goaltending in that game.
Oh, yeah.
The goaltending.
They were the stars, sides.
Yeah, unbelievable. You said a turnover on the goal. I also think it was a bad change because that could have been a two-on-two that would they would have been able to hold the line, would not be able to give up space.
You don't give a screen when you're trying to dive.
You don't give up that goal that of all the saves they made, and that one goes in. Of all the saves, I'm sorry, that Karan makes. I mean, that's the one that goes in. I felt sick for him on that one because he was outstanding. Davis was good at the beginning too. I mean,
had to be in the first period.
Yep, that was a very well goaltended hockey game. And any time a 2-1 game is well goaltended, it's
so Davis in particular. I cranked these numbers last night, leading into the NCAA. So regular season and NCHC tournament, he was a .908 save percentage goalie. In the three games in the NCAA tournament, .972.
It's pretty impressive.
103 saves on 106 shots.
But this goes to the absolute formula of Denver right now. And, you know, I wrote about this today. You can read it on USCHO.com. Shameless plug.
Yep, plug.
But, you know, David Carle straight out said that at the halfway point of the season, he looked at the defensive stats. They were 40th in the nation in defense, team defense. And he said to his team, you know what? Nobody has been outside of the top 10 in defense, basically, and won a national championship except our team in 2022 that beat Minnesota State. We have to get better. And they did get better at times. There were still some stinkers in the second half. I know they had a 7-2 loss in February, you know. But I crunched their numbers for the last month, which is, basically your conference tournament, semis, finals, your regionals, and your NCAA game. They have the lowest goals allowed in that span. I think it was 1.46 or 1.47 in the last 28 days. Their defense has clamped down, and they have found a way to really clog things up. Greg Brown said that you can see that they defend as a unit of five. He said, you see they move in the same direction. There's no separation. Everybody's on the same page. They're all moving in the right way. And Greg Brown was pretty simple with what he's saying. I know we'll talk about the game, but he said, we're going to find a way. We have to get speed, and we have to cross the ice with the puck. It has to move from side to side. Because if you move statically, and I thought that BU did that a little bit too much. Macklin Celebrini made some unreal passes. Lane Hudson was the beneficiary of a lot of them, and some of those one-timers were great saves. But for the most part, they did not cross the ice a lot with the puck, and it was very linear. North-south, there was not a lot of east-west. I thought that was a big problem with BU.
You know, I got to ask you on this, Derek, because as you're mentioning it, Jim, we were next to each other in the press box and talking about those east-west passes that were happening in the first period. Did they get out of that as the game went on?
I don't know. I think that it's tough when the momentum of a game switches to turn it back. And I think when you feel it, you try to get outside of what you were doing. And you always try to stick with what is successful. And when the game switches, you always, as a coach, are talking about stay within ourselves, stay with the game plan, stick with what makes you successful. And you need something to flip. You need something positive to happen. And I'll go back to, you need a power play. You need a goal to happen. You need a bounce. You need a break. And they just never got that. And that's where they started pressing a little bit.
Oh, did they ever?
And then that's where I think it happened. And they just started.
That was really.
They got out of sorts.
The play that changed the game in overtime for the game-winning goal, they were trying to do a little bit too much. The puck, that was one of the east-west passes that they made. And then when you don't handle it, it went quickly the other way. As you said, it was a bad change, bad timing on a change. Those are the types of plays that you just can't make at that point.
That was the first goal, too. Hudson tried to do too much. He could have just exited out the weak side, and he reversed it to the nobody, and the puck goes in the net.
Great read, too. Great read below the low. Below the goal line.
And what, LeMay, or was LeMay who scored the goal for the
Lemire.
Lemire, yeah.
Tristan Lemire,
yeah. His second goal of the year. I mean, he's dressed as a 13 forward.
Right.
And I mean,
barely played shift in the game.
Yeah, but that's when you're trying to, you're getting frustrated. And then you try to do just a little bit too much. And I mean, you saw it. I mean, Hudson was trying to do a lot on the blue line. He was trying to fake and walk and do, trying to make a lot happen, and it just wasn't working for him.
Yeah, and, you know, he looked at the final stat sheet, and I never looked at the number that he finished with. Macklin Celebrini ends up with a lot of shots, but at the same time, he was somewhat contained. I thought that Denver did a pretty good job of just making sure that they had somebody close to him. He got shots off, and he made some unbelievable passes. Maybe some of those should have ended up in the back of the net, but they did a pretty good job of taking one of the best players generationally that we're ever going to see in college hockey and shutting him down.
Well, I mean, Tuck has the shorthanded goal. That's all they have. The first two periods, I sit with Frank Cerutori and Tom Cerutori, and I texted Todd Malisky and asked him if they had time on ice, because we're talking of who was getting ice time,
right,
if they were coming back, if they were playing four lines, because it felt like Denver was getting stronger as the game was going on, and if the younger legs of BU were just not able to continue playing as much as they were. Because if you look at the line chart wasn't set up 1, 2, 3, 4.
No, it never
it
is.
It was set up 1, 2.
One,
I thought it was
3, 4, 2.
I thought it was 1, 2, 4, 3.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you can go either way. Yeah,
yeah, so because Frank kept going, oh, look, the fourth line's out. I go,
No, don't worry about that.
Yeah, because so we were trying to figure out, and that's why I texted Todd, and obviously the only way that you could figure out what the ice time would be for us when we would be going back to the hotel and looking at RinkNet and seeing the ice time tonight, because we don't have the ability,
right,
to get the ice time like the NHL does.
I wish we did.
Well, I should have looked at it this morning, but it's just, that's where it looked like the game started changing, is when they were just continuing to, Denver just looked deeper.
Yeah.
They looked deeper with four lines deeper.
Yeah.
And when your 13 forward scores the goal to get him going, you know that you got something.
Yeah,
going.
It's a timing thing. And don't forget, you know, Denver was also moving, subbing for Massimo Rizzo, who was,
well, he starts on the fourth line and then he was all over the place.
Finished the game by the first line.
Because we were in the box at Frank and Tom and I were in the championship committees, and I talked to Scott Sandlin a little bit in between periods, and he said Rizzo's not really on the fourth line anymore, is he?
Well, we pretty well covered that game. The other game started out feeling like Michigan
opposite
might
way,
prevail.
Right?
Yeah, I mean they were solid in that first period.
Well, let's say that. No, they were solid, but the difference was BC scored.
Right.
80 seconds in or
yeah,
whatever it was.
BC
it was quick.
Scores.
Yeah.
And then Michigan dominated, but Michigan couldn't get the bounce.
No. And you have to give Fowler a lot of credit for Boston College. What a first period he had. And I think if he doesn't make some of those early saves, it's a different ballgame. You're down 3-1 in that game, and you're chasing just like the Quinnipiac game. That's another hard comeback for BC. Don't get me wrong. I think they have that ability. We saw how quick they scored two goals in whatever it was, 44 seconds in the second period. We know that they can do that, but you can't keep chasing games. And I thought that BC could have been in one of those situations that they were chasing, but they always had that lead from, you know, 80 seconds in and really played well from that point.
How about that goal, though? Leonard DeSmith on the 2-on-1.
Oh,
just
what
sick.
A pass. I mean, you know, that's what I've watched it all year. I've been so lucky to I think I've called, I don't know, 13 Boston College games, maybe more this year. And the number of times you see that, that's that innate ability. I loved how Greg Brown said today, he said, you know, for the first 2 weeks of, you know, camp when we were starting the season, we didn't have, you know, Leonard, Smith, Perreault on the same line together. Then we put them together and it was, whoa. You recognize something as soon as you see that talent together.
But then two quick goals in the second made it 3-0, and that pretty much ended things for Michigan.
Yeah, that was killer for them, I thought. That's what you just can't have. You know, I think if Michigan, you can't have bounces go against you. The second goal was a bad bounce. It's just a centering pass goes off one defenseman's right skate, then his left skate, then goes between the goalie's legs. I mean, though, if you're going to beat a team like Boston College right now, you can't have bounces go against you.
Well, so you're dominating the game. You're trailing. You're out shooting them. You're trailing. You get the bounce go against you. Then they come back. Both goals were 4-on-4 goals. Both those two goals were 4-on-4 breakaway goals. Then they come out and they score that wraparound goal. They've scored 4 goals on 16 shots. So it comes to the whole thing, and next thing you know, how do they come back from that? Because it just continues to go against them. 4 goals on 16 shots, and they're all playing them.
Right.
And we talked about that, and when we did our thing afterwards, Ed, that Michigan deserved a better fate, but once that happened, I think the air went out of the building, and the air went out of the building on the fourth goal, and you might as well just ran the clock.
Yeah, at that point. Now, how do you look back on this season for Michigan? You know, 6 weeks ago, we were looking at them as...
Not in the tournament?
Not in the tournament. In fact,
right.
I was talking to Jess Myers from the Rink Live last night, and he said, yeah, you know, they were sitting at 16 in the pairwise, and Minnesota had the opportunity to really put them out of the tournament in the game that Michigan won 5-4 in overtime, I think it was. And then Michigan got a win at Notre Dame, and the next thing you know, they're right back in it. They make it to the national semifinal, that strong win over North Dakota, and then the overtime win over their arch rival, Michigan State, and make it to that. Kind of a disappointing performance, but how do you sum up that whole season for the Wolverines?
I kind of see it as a growing season. You know, they learned so much down the stretch.
Is any time you make the Frozen Four disappointing?
No, it's not.
You're...
it's such an amazing thing. But for a program that I think probably started out the season thinking that they could be a juggernaut, faltered a little bit at times, found their way in, then got to the Frozen Four. I mean, yeah, I just think that there's, who knows with NHL signings, the portal, who's back on that team next year. I assume you're going to have a lot of returning players. They learned a lot, and I think that the postseason, that was their value, was how much that they probably grew. I mean, Derek, you know, you're kind of looking at me like with a weird face, but I don't know if you agree with that as a coach. I feel like that you had to take something, you had to take a lot of positives out of that postseason.
No, I mean, no, I think anytime you play to this time of the year, you look at it as a success. Obviously, you're disappointed in your result. Only one team is happy at the end of the year.
Right.
You're always disappointed in your last game. I mean, RIT, they're happy that they won Atlantic Hockey, but they're disappointed in their last game.
Right.
Overall, the season's a success, but they're disappointed in how it ended. I mean, they're happy with...
There's two teams that won their conference tournament that are still happy. Boston College and Denver.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, for now.
And one of them is going to be sad tomorrow. Like, that's just the reality.
The only teams that don't end their season with a W are those who are eliminated from their league playoffs already and get a win in their last game. But everybody made the playoffs this year in their league. So there's nobody in that situation. So there's one team that wins their final game of the year this year.
Unless you're an independent. And
oh, that's right.
You
are an independent, yeah. And then you've won a game that really didn't mean anything.
I just thought the star power of BC was too much for Michigan.
Yeah,
because and I'm not going to just use the skaters. I'm going to use Fowler. I mean, World Junior, decorated goalie, 4-0 shutout. It was the difference in the first period, and then allowed the big guns to be their big guns, and they were the difference as offensively, and Pollard didn't allow a goal.
Yeah, I mean,
What were the records that were thrown out? You told me this morning, 13-1-2 for Denver in their last 16, and
obviously 15-0 for Boston College in their last 15.
Yeah, I mean, so it's these numbers that these are the two teams that are the best two teams right now.
Yeah, I think it was 13-1-1 and 15-0. So they combined, they're 28-1-1.
I mean, yes, BU is the number two seed, but they've lost more games than Denver has recently. So the two hottest teams are playing in the national championship game.
The kid line. Now, I saw some of these guys when they were playing in the U.S. national team development program, you know, and you, you know, add players in there like Adam Augustine and Zeev Buyam, who were with him last year. Just absurdly talented team. To get that kid line together, this is the first time seeing them in person for me. And the order of magnitude more impressive they are in person than on TV is just, I was just blown away by that.
You just came up with the all name team though. William or however you
William.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean those brothers.
Shy and Zeev.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't even say them correctly.
I can tell you I called the BC game in October, and so that's pretty early in the season. And we talked to Greg Brown in our pre-production, and he said, we asked him about that line together and the fact that sometimes they make some crazy passes and they look careless, but they usually work. And he said, you know what? I've learned that I just have to trust them. We have to just go and let them know what they're doing because they don't make that many mistakes. And Ryan Lambert, who's been covering this sport a long time, and I'm not going to get the number right. I think he said that they outscored their opponents. I thought he said 81-24, and even that sounds too low. I think they have more than 81 goals, but together, I mean, I guess if you take power plays out, if you're just talking 5-on-5 goals, 81-24.
Wow,
that's ridiculous.
Yep.
The other stat he gave me, and we'll talk about the Hobie Cutter Gauthier. He had about 60-something minutes of penalty kill time on the ice this season. That's a whole game he
right.
basically killed over the course of the season in his penalty killing time. And during that time, Boston College outscored their opponents 2-0.
Wow.
He was not on the ice for a power play goal against the entire season, and they scored two times shorthanded while he was on the ice.
So that's like, 40 penalty? No, 120 penalty kill shifts, right? 60 minutes, say 30 seconds or
yeah.
less a shift.
Maybe, let's say a minute. Let's go a minute.
Say you get
yeah.
stuck out there a
yeah.
bit. Yeah. So 60 to 100.
20 penalty kills, somewhere like
yeah.
in there.
Wow.
That was just a stat. And Ryan Lambert, he's a stat guy. If anybody knows him, great writer. And he pulled those stats out today. It makes you shake your head about this team. And just, you know, I don't want to make this team about those four players. There's some great talent up and down that lineup. And obviously a great goaltender in Devine. Eamon Paul on the back end, you know, a senior captain, fantastic defenseman and stuff like that. But, you know, it's one of those situations where you have to look at those four players. They're so good. They're so exceptional compared to everything else we see in college hockey. It's been a long time since we have seen a team with this dominant a group. You can go back to 92-93 and you had, Korea, Montgomery, the Ferraro brothers, some great defensemen on that main team. I mean, you had the CBS line for North Dakota. Was that 2016? But I just don't remember this type of a line before that's young. It's the youth that is just so shocking to me.
And at a skill level that is almost unprecedented.
I mean, you watch it, Derek. I mean, when you're looking at these guys on the ice, is that one of the most impressive things just to see them in person and see the puck move and see the speed? And it's effortless speed, too.
And just that they're young. And they're dominant.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in a game in college hockey getting bigger, older, stronger, and faster, you're talking young right now.
Well, we had that whole thing about, we got to limit the age of these players that are coming in because these young guys don't have a chance against these, 6'2", 210-pound, 23, 24-year-old players. Well, I'll tell you, these guys look pretty good at
yeah,
age 17.
Yeah, because they can't catch
eight.
Them. Well, we're about the midway point of our podcast.
We just went 30 minutes.
We were worried about filling 20, right?
Right. So we're gonna take a quick pause, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Hobie, the Richter, and the other awards doled out today, plus a quick look at tomorrow's national championship game here on USCHO Live Friday at the 2024 Frozen Four in St. Paul. USCHO Live Friday at the 2024 Frozen Four in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Ed Trevsker with Derek Schooley, Jim Connolly. Today, the major awards in college hockey were announced, and the biggest of all of them is the Hobey Baker Award, which is for college hockey's best player, sort of the Heisman Trophy of college hockey for those who are not familiar. That's usually how I describe it to people. And then they either say, oh, I get it, or what's the Heisman Trophy? And then I just don't worry about it. But, you know, the Hobey hat trick was three players, Macklin Celebrini, Cutter Gauthier, Celebrini from BU, Gauthier from BC, and Jackson Blake,
North Dakota.
I get those J names all tangled up in my brain. Jackson Blake from North Dakota, all deserving, and as we were talking before the program, probably three or four more could have been candidates for that Hobey hat trick. This started out with the coaches voting for three in their league, three nationally, getting down to the group of 10, and then that 10 going to the Hobey Baker voting committee, a group of 27 voters who then vote for their top three. And there's one vote, the top three that are announced, the winner was already already chosen out of that with the voting. And so today it was announced, and it was Macklin Celebrini. I'm not surprised. I felt that my hunch was that it was going to go that way.
You're on the call. You listen to the feedback.
You hear the feedback. I think we're really not allowed to discuss much on the call about the call, but I think that's the way the sentiment seemed to be leaning in that direction. But there were cases being made for all of the players. All of the 10 that were in that group were very good players, obviously. And like I said, I think 5-6 players easily could have been there. The one that everybody mentions that they think should have been in there is the rookie Will Smith from BC, who
right.
scored his 70th and 71st point on 2 goals last night against Michigan. So let's hear your take. You've seen Celebrini, you've seen the other Hockey East players a lot. Are you surprised? Does this seem like what you expected?
It does. And I believe, I did not fact check this before we got on the air, but I believe he's the first 17-year-old to win the Hobie.
True.
Paul Kariya had turned 18 by the time he had won. It's impressive what Celebrini did this year. And I will tell you, I don't remember the year. It's a long time ago. When Sidney Crosby came to the NHL, I was, kind of in awe of everything I'd heard about him, never seen him play. So the first game in Boston that he played, I bought tickets to. And I remember that was not a good Pittsburgh team back then. Not surprising, he was the number one overall pick because they sucked. And I remember watching him try to make plays, and there wasn't enough talent around him to set up the plays. He would make these passes that were unbelievable. Now, what I thought the benefit for Celebrini was he had some finishers on that team. Obviously, Lane Hutson probably being the best. And really impressive the way that Celebrini not only set up players, but then balanced things off with goal scoring. I believe he was 32-32, 64 points when he finished, 32 goals, 32 assists. That's a pretty good balance for a forward, especially at the age of 17. I think that people might have actually taken his age into account when they vote for him, too. The fact that he was this young, that he was able to do this all at such a young age, that's very impressive as well. You asked me about the other, and I will say I didn't see a lot of Jackson Blake, except a few games I watched on TV that North Dakota was either on CBS or on Midco that I was able to pick up. And he's a very good player, excellent player, and obviously, now in the NHL, he's going to have a great NHL career, I'm sure. I do think that Carter Gauthier is, I'm not a baseball guy. Somebody must be more of a baseball guy here. The five-tool player or whatever they call, like the guy that can do everything. That's what Gauthier feels like to me. He feels like he can do almost everything. And I think, if size is not a factor for him, he's a decent-sized player. He's just not a massive player. If his build, his size can be taken into account in the NHL and your teams will – a team, I don't even remember who he's drafted by, but whoever has him gives him that chance in the NHL, he will do it all. He'll kill penalties. He'll be on your power play. Sometimes coaches don't even like that at the pro level. He will get up and down the ice. He'll set guys up. He'll finish. He'll score. He'll play defense. He'll backtrack. But he does a lot. And I'm not trying to take that away from Celebrini at all. I think he's a pretty complete player as well. But I feel like I don't want to leave Gauthier's value out of this. If it was close, I'd be surprised if it wasn't very close, the vote. That's how I believe that those two players. And Smith and Gauthier may have split a vote a bit. Both Boston College guys, nobody knows which one to vote for.
That's of course, you could say the same thing with Celebrini and Hutson.
I think that Hutson didn't have the same season he had last year, though. And that's the big difference maker. Yes, he was a repeat finalist, repeat All-American. But Hutson was not the same player this year. And maybe it's the fact it was easy to upstage him with a player like Macklin Celebrini.
I'm going
to
put this in perspective, though. He's a 2006.
Yeah.
He could play He should have been playing junior hockey and would have three more years of junior hockey left
eligibility
after
yeah.
this year. Eligibility after this year. I mean, that's crazy. My son's an 05, which means he's a year older than him and hasn't even started junior hockey yet. And he's a decent player, my kid is. So, I mean, that just shows you what this kid's doing. And he had 32 goals in college hockey. I mean, that just puts it in perspective.
Yeah.
He is doing extraordinary things at a very young age.
And I think that was probably taken into consideration,
yeah.
the fact that he did this at a ridiculously young age.
The other major award, and I guess that they're all big awards, they're all prominent players, but the next big one was the Mike Richter Award, and for the first time, a Wisconsin goalie got to present the award to a Wisconsin goalie, Kyle McClellan.
Surprising to me, and we had this conversation in the hotel before we came over here, Ed, and you weren't a part of it, so I'll give you my opinion first. He was a second-team All-American, which means there were two first-team All-Americans, East and West, before him.
Let's say one and two
even,
on the West.
Even one in the West, and then he's the Mike Richter Award winner. So I guess it'd be like the Heisman Trophy, the quarterback being a second-team All-American, but he won the Heisman Trophy.
Right.
So I understand it and take nothing away from Kyle McClellan. It's just weird to me.
Right.
Well, it's different pools of voters.
Different pool of voters. And,
which
yeah.
I guess if I'm a normal person, I know that because Jimmy explained it to me. My first look at it is like, that's bizarre.
Right.
Is that not a fair statement?
And people are already saying that on social media right now.
All Americans are voted on by coaches. The Richter Award, the Hobie Award, there's other balloters. I know I'm a Richter balloter. I've been a Hobie balloter. Ed, you're a Hobie balloter now. There's a different pool. And that comes into play, I'm sure. I think coaches might have a different sense than maybe media members or maybe, you know, when you get to the Hobie, you really have
you've got
officials, you have the
scouts.
All six leagues get to be represented by their heads of officials, NHL scouts. You have different media members from different mediums,
right?
All represented. So that is a little.
I just find voting to be, it's bizarre. Like even my team voting,
right?
There's sometimes where I've got my MVP isn't even the defensive player of the year.
Right.
And they're a defenseman, per se. But,
right.
I mean, it's just weird when people, how they vote sometimes and the results. And like you said, it's a normal person looks at that and goes, that's crazy.
How did that happen?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with McClellan getting the
award.
No,
neither do I.
Follow was great. And Barrico, really good. Really changed that Colorado College program with his performance this year. He ended up being the first team All-America. But, I mean, I think when I kind of got the sense early on in the conversations, McClellan was the guy that was going to get that award likely. And the votes are taken. That vote, I'm trying to remember, I believe that vote was taken maybe right after regionals. So, you know, if you're thinking about Boston College and why their goaltender maybe didn't get more love, he didn't have a great game, not a bad game against Quinnipiac, but he let up goals, right? Like, and people sit there and say, you know, that's something you can look at.
Recency bias or
bias against.
Right.
Neither one of these awards surprised me.
So here's the case for McClellan. He led the nation with 7 shutouts.
Right.
Sounds like Dylan McKay, who played for Mike Hastings at Minnesota State. Tied for the national lead with a .931 save percentage and second with a 1.94 goals against, 24-12-1 in 37 appearances. Those are all pretty good numbers.
And only in back of the Cornell goaltender, right, who didn't even get into the top 10 or the finals for the
right.
for the Richter Award. So
yeah. So
who isn't also a second team All-American?
He
right.
was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that brings us to, let's talk about the next really hockey-based thing before we get into some of them that are sort of more off-ice related, and that's the All-American teams. There were two teams in the East, two teams in the West. So a total of 24 players named today in that. And Jim, you want to go first team East, first team West, then second team East, second team West?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I've done this for a while, and I don't know that I always paid a ton of attention to All-Americans, but the entire first team from Hockey East this year, you don't see that a lot. Usually ECAC or Atlantic creeps in there, but first team East, Jacob Fowler in goal, Lane Hudson, Ryan Ufko, Lane Hudson from Boston University, Ryan Ufko from UMass. On defense, Macklin Celebrini, Cutter Gauthier, Will Smith. We've talked plenty about all of them. That's your first team. Second team, Ian Shane, just mentioned it, Cornell's goaltender. Gianfranco Cassaro from RIT. Defense, John Prokop from Union. That's a pretty good win for Union. That's a program that you want to see some good awards coming from. Colin Graf, Quinnipiac, no surprise there. Ryan Leonard, Boston College. Then you end up getting four forwards. That must have been a tie in the ballot. And Liam McClinsky from Holy Cross. Gabe Perreault from Boston College. The thing that stands, I mentioned BC having, Hockey East having the entire first team. I'm impressed with two All-Americans from Atlantic Hockey, too. That shows some real growth in that league.
Yeah. I mean, that's... As a coach in that league, that's got to be good for you, recruiting and the brand of the league to have players of that prominence when you're talking about playing in the conference.
Yeah, Cassaro was a Hobie Baker finalist. McClinsky was a Hobie Baker finalist, and Cassaro was outstanding. He was really good. We saw him six times, and he was dominant on the blue line. Yeah, those are very good picks by the coaches.
On the west side of it, in goal, on the first team, Caden Imbarico from Colorado College, just mentioned what he did for that program. Defense, Zeev Bouillam from Denver, Seamus Casey from Michigan, fantastic player. Jackson Blake, the Hobie Baker hat trick, candidate from North Dakota. Brindley from Michigan, and Jack Devine from Denver. He really stood out to me at times thus far in this tournament. Second team, Kyle McClellan, we mentioned the Richter Award winner. He was the second team goaltender from Wisconsin. Dylan Anhorn, God, this is awful that I didn't rehearse these names before I did it. St. Cloud's defenseman. Artem Leshinov from Michigan State, fantastic defenseman. Neil Koepke would kill me on that one. Noah Lava from Colorado College. Rutger McGroarty from Michigan. And then Massimo Rizzo from Denver. And everybody's name that I screwed up, I apologize. I should be better on these Western names. I just don't have to broadcast them as much. Any surprises?
That's your Eastern bias for you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, terrific. Again, you can probably make cases for players who didn't make it on there, but you can't take it away from anybody who's on there.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that you can make cases for. I mean, everybody's going to have problems with certain people and certain ones here, certain ones there. But, I mean, the coaches did it right. I mean, every league's represented in big spots, so I can't argue with that.
Actually, was every league represented?
Yeah.
Did the CCHA have somebody?
No. Okay.
They did not. Five out of six leagues were represented.
Okay, so there's probably a league that's really mad.
So maybe somebody's mad out there. But, we had some incredible talent across the country this year. We've seen it. Now we're seeing it on display. Tomorrow night you're going to have eight All-Americans playing in the national championship game. That's pretty impressive. I don't know that we can say that that's happened that often.
Right.
Obviously we've talked so much about the number of national championships represented tomorrow night's game, 28 between the four and the Frozen Four, and tomorrow night you'll end up with 14 represented in the national title game.
So it'll either be number 10 for Denver, the first to double digits, or six for Boston College.
And five of those since the year 2001.
Yeah, so that's pretty impressive. There were two other awards given out today that we should mention. Dylan Lugris, winner of the Hockey Humanitarian Award, with his work with the State College Coyotes, a sled hockey team that plays on Sundays at Pagula Ice Arena. He got interested in them, got the team involved, did some fundraising, raised nearly $50,000 for that sled hockey team in a couple of big Penn State Sled Hockey Classic games. Terrific to see the recognition there, and that's another award where you can make a great case for all the finalists.
I mean, we get touched by that every year, and I'll tell you, we've done interviews with the winner on the show a couple of times, and I think I've kind of shied away from that because I always get teary-eyed when I listen to their stories. These are just the best citizens, you know, and it really comes down to that.
The other one was the Derek Hines Unsung Hero Award, which is a favorite of our friend Brian Riley, the head coach at Army. Derek Hines was killed in action. And this year, I think it's the seventh time it's gone to a military academy player, and it's Luke Robinson from Air Force.
As somebody who worked at a military academy, you really respect what they do every day and what they put into it. And obviously, it's special and near and dear to Brian's heart. I believe Derek Hines' brother was here presenting
the award.
And Luke Robinson, obviously, very well-deserving as there probably once again were a lot of very good nominees for this award.
Well, one other award we did skip over, and it was probably the obvious.
Oh, the Tim Taylor.
Tim Taylor Award went to Macklin Celebrini. Obviously,
yep.
If you're going to win the whole
year, Rookie of the Year.
Hopefully, you get Rookie of the Year if you're going to be a freshman.
Well,
you
never know.
You never do.
Different pools of voters.
You know, but Tim Taylor was a fantastic guy. Anybody that ever got a chance to know him, I worked in New Haven for 1 year and in the pro team, and I always was impressed that he would sit there at almost every one of our practices and take notes of the drills that were being done. That he was, and at that point, he was probably in his 60s or 70s and was still a student of the game. Great guy. So obviously just want to make sure we acknowledge the Tim Taylor Award as well.
Well, that gives us about 7 minutes for us to talk a little bit about tomorrow's national championship game. And, you know, coming into the weekend, I would have thought BC and BU, and I even said that on Thursday, that was my picks.
We all
that
did.
That was the thing to see. But after seeing Denver last night, boy, I got to believe in Denver. Do they win the national championship? I don't know. But, boy, they will be great contenders.
Man, I wish schools went out on a limb on Thursday because you said it. There was going to be an upset. I don't think you wanted to pick Michigan, so I felt like you were going to pick Denver.
I was so soft in trying to make that decision.
You almost did it, but you couldn't pull the trigger.
Because
okay.
I knew the one I would have done would have been Denver.
Yeah?
I would have. I knew. I just was – I couldn't get myself there. I knew I was there with BC all the way, but
I want to thank BC for giving me the first real pick I've ever made that's been true on this podcast that's come true. You know, the Quinnipiac last year, as I said, I was trying to be sarcastic, and they ended up coming true. But, you know, I look at this game. I wrote my advance on it today, and it comes down to who wants to play the style they want to play. If BC scores goals, and I know they played a 4-3 game in Chestnut Hill way back on October 21st, 2023 of this season, and it was a 4-3 win for Denver. Both teams are so different, you have to almost throw out the tape. There's not a lot you can gain from that. They've changed too much, both teams. But I think if BC can score goals, if they can pop 3 or 4 tomorrow, I feel pretty good about them. If Denver can do what you said on Thursday, if they can hold this to a 2-1 game, a 1-0 game, a 3-0 game, a 3-1 game, I don't write off Denver.
I'm going to say if BC can get to 3,
that's it.
They win. Yep.
Yeah.
It's the old adage, first 1 to 3 wins. I think BC's got to get the 3 on this one.
Sean Walsh always said 4, but I'll go with 3. That's fine. It's a new world of hockey.
Yeah, I mean, that was way back when.
But these are the top 2 offenses in the country, and we're kind of talking a lot more about the fact of
where was the goal. You gave me credit, but I also said pick the over in both games, and yet there was only 7 goals scored.
Both games went under. The in game, I walked up to Ed. It was 1-0 in the BC game, and we were talking, and you said, oh, the in-game over-under is down to 4.5. I said, oh, I would hammer the over. I felt like we'd get 4 goals at least. And then we got 2 right away, and I'm like, oh, I wish I bet that.
Yeah.
And then it sat at 4. Michigan shocked me by never scoring in that game.
So speaking of odds, these are the lines now about 22 hours away from the game tomorrow. Boston College still a very heavy favorite in this one. Boston College -298, Denver +220.
That's actually gone up since last night. Last night it was about -220 +170.
Wow.
So that's changed very significantly. Is the over-under still 6?
Yes.
6 on the over-under. Is it shaded anyway?
Toward under.
Toward the so look at this. You have the top 2 offenses in the country playing against each other. And even the bookmakers are saying, we think this game is going to be under 6. They average combined almost 10 goals a game. And
crazy.
The bookmakers are going to say we're going to be under 6 tomorrow. And they're going heavily. They're shading that way.
I'm good. I'm glad I have about, 20 hours to come up with my pick?
Right.
Yeah. About that.
Yeah, I'm going to, tonight at the USCHO party, I'm going to make sure I talk to a lot of people. I'm going to go in depth with my pick this year. Last year I went with my gut with Minnesota. Didn't get it. So this year I'm going to do a lot of research here on this one.
I almost feel like I have to pick against Boston College. I mean, as a hockey's homer, I want them to
you
win.
Well,
you so
pick,
you have to pick against
them. Do you want to be renewed? You got to pick.
Okay, so.
Good point.
Yeah.
I have a contract.
So, here's our homework assignment for tomorrow. Not just maybe trying to say who you think's going to win, but for and against each team winning. What does that team have to do to be the national champion,
okay.
And what do they have to avoid?
I already said it with BC, score 3 goals.
Well, you know, if Denver scores 6 goals, they're going to win, unless it's a 7-6 track meet, which I don't expect.
Well, we're down to under 2 minutes. Did you hear the big transfer portal news today, Ed?
What's that?
That's the whole thing that's been going on, the big transfer portal news.
Yeah.
That USCHO tried to put me in the transfer portal today for next year.
Really?
I refused to go in, and Jimmy and I renegotiated my contract, and,
okay.
And he allowed me to come back for next year. So I took myself out of the USCHO media transfer portal, and we're going to be, as long as Jimmy's going to allow me to return.
Well, we're fine. I mean, it was just your agent calling me and saying that he thought that you wanted to go somewhere else.
Family advisor. It's a family advisor.
By the way, just saw on NHL Network's former UMass defenseman Scott Morrow making his NHL debut tonight with the Carolina Hurricanes.
There are other websites having other parties. I don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Our owner, Tim Brule, is not as hard-nosed as many coaches are. He'll let you go in and come back out of the portal. Not everybody does that.
Yeah, we don't take away your key card, trust me.
Yeah, I mean, you could end up doing a podcast for the Barking Pumpkin Monthly.
Don't take away my access codes and passwords.
Well, no, we won't do that. We'll keep your company email.
Well, anyway, we're going to be back tomorrow with our final podcast from St. Paul for this year, 1-3 Central Time. We're going to be talking a bit about the game tomorrow. But who are our guests quickly, Jim, before we break?
Oh, of course you're going to ask me that because I don't have it right in front of me. I know that we have Michelle Morgan with the Atlantic Hockey Commissioner. We will have Sadie Lundquist.
Oh, that's right. The new women's
director of College Hockey, Inc. We will have our good friend Andrew Mahoney from the Boston Globe back. He'll preview the games.
And Jeff Fulton and Eric Martinson talking NCAA
rules and officiating. I feel like I'm missing one.
Nope, we have 120. I think we're open.
No, I filled it. I can't remember who's in there, though.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow. That's going to wrap it up for this evening from Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub. Come see us tomorrow if you're in town. For Derek Schooley, for Jim Connolly, I'm Ed Trepsker, and this has been USCHO Live.
Early game tomorrow, too.
5 p.m. local time.